It's April 20th, 2017. We're at Tulsa Community College interviewing Doug Price with Jake Lawson, Jacob Bailey, and Tyler Dudley about international students. So our first question is, like, how long have you been involved with the Global Campus?
Probably about 12 years. I've been at TCC for 27 years, but...
What did you do prior to being involved?
I worked in student affairs. I was a career counselor, academic advisor. Then I switched into the academic department and was an associate dean of liberal arts and community services at our Northeast campus. And there's a point at which our international individual retired, and so I stepped in and did some interim work there. And then when they opened up the position, I applied and got that position for global education. That was in 2006.
What's, like, the best part of being involved with Global Campus? Like,
I think probably just even reflective of the nature of the title, that Global Campus, being connected around the world. But what we've really been pushing lately is more connecting local with the global, because we're all global, right? We're all on the planet, so we're all global citizens. We're all in some space, some soil of the world, so we're all kind of together in this on one planet. So, but how do we connect? But also to explore why we don't connect. What are the reasons why this group doesn't connect with this group, or this doesn't connect with this, and why? Do you pursue that? Do you not pursue that? But what's the beauty, what's the knowledge, what's the wisdom that comes out of connecting with people who have different experiences and see life differently because they grew up in a rural area that sees water usage different? I have a friend who is from Ecuador, and if we all went to dinner in Ecuador and it's like, well, do you want water? Do you want a Pepsi or Coke or whatever soft drink? And I'm like, well, water, right? Saves money, it's more healthy, and you go to get your bill. It's like, sir, waiter, you charge me for water. Hello, you're in Ecuador and we charge for water. Oh, well, I should have got a Pepsi then, because in the United States, we pay for Pepsi, but not water, it's free. It's a complimentary beverage and it's healthier. So that's not a huge deal, but it's interesting to know. So when we go to a restaurant in the United States and we're having a conversation, say, hey, you know, in Ecuador, you have to pay for water there. Well, why? And then someone hopefully would say, well, why? And you're like, well, I don't know that part. I just know that you have to pay. And then it creates, I think, a little bit more of an intellectual environment. I mean, for example, if I asked the three of you, how many continents do we have? What would your answer be?
Seven.
That's a good answer. If you're going to school in Peru or South American country, they will teach you there's five. Now, that doesn't mean the earth has changed. It's just the perception of how they might lump certain continents in our mind together as one. Not a big deal. It doesn't change the landmass that's visible to humankind and water and all that, but how it's perceived is different. So if you're taking a quiz, and how many continents are there on the earth? A, 7, B, 5, whatever, and I get your quiz, and you're hoping for 100%, but you missed one question, and that was it. You're like, well, it's 7. Yeah. Well, that's the way we teach it. Not a big deal, but you start looking at these different ideas and how we begin to realize it begins to kind of deconstruct how we think there is just one knowledge. And we're not talking about changing someone's personal beliefs or religious beliefs per se, but how we see needs to be viewed, that there are multiple ways of seeing something from various worldviews. And I think that's a great global learning skill to have. And sometimes it's tough. If I worked with a lot of people who never left never left Oklahoma. That's not a judgment. It's not being pejorative. I hope they get out of Oklahoma. They probably hope they get out of Oklahoma too. But just think about anyone in this world who has grown up in this, the same radius of area. Their views could be a little bit more myopic, even more so here, because other world areas you might grow up and never leave your community, but you're also speaking two or three different languages. Yeah. You know, so at least you have that bilingual or trilingual presence with you, that if you went to the U.S. to study, as some of our students do, and now they've learned English, which is a fourth language, it's just incredible. But to me, it's just shattering or deconstructing our students in particular ways to what is the idea that things can be seen differently. So
does their, like, different views, like, make it more difficult here to learn? Like, do they see things differently, like, if they're being taught, like, I don't know.
They do, actually. This is something my colleague and I just learned the other day. Well, not this part, but the next part I'll say we did learn the other day. When we talk to international students, and I've had them do presentations in front of faculty to kind of, you know, as you're teaching us, here's some things to think about. I mean, we certainly want to respect the faculty, but when we come from other world areas, this is our perspective as new incoming students. After a year or two, they might adjust. But one student talked about the notion of double work, which to most people is kind of a foreign concept, no pun intended. But if I am learning English as my second language, and you're the professor and you're teaching philosophy, whatever you're teaching, I literally will go back and translate the notes I've taken into my language so I can study those notes and understand it within my language structure. Not just the words you spoke, but the words that in any language have more deeper meaning. You get the idea, because it just takes years of learning a language to get that. And then translate back to write an essay or whatever, or come back and discuss in English the next time you're teaching and want to have a group discussion after you've taught your material. And that that notion of double work is very interesting. The second thing that we just learned the other day is that if you're studying various languages, sometimes they read right to left.
Yeah.
Arabic. Now, what we didn't know, which is very fascinating, if you're from Saudi Arabia, for example, and you've learned math. I didn't realize this, but I was talking to a Saudi student the other day. Same thing with math, right to left. So if you're a professor and say, okay, Abdul, come on up and I want you to do a couple math problems on the board. I mean, everyone's going to do it, but you know, you're one of our students. And if he did it the way he would think to do it, he'd be going right to left. People go, whoa, that's backwards.
Yeah.
You know, but think about it. It's made me think, if you're all of a sudden watching, you know, you're the professor, you're the mathematician, and you're teaching college algebra or something and writing up some equation, but wrote it the other way, most of your students would go, what? The guy from Saudi might be going, hey, I like you, teacher. But they have to look at it and then probably process it in their mind, somewhat like someone who has dyslexia. You know, they look at something and they might switch it around or something like that. They have to mentally switch it and then think about it this way and then think about the answer and then come back and switch it back and then that. It has really made me think about this. Now, it doesn't change the way the professor teaches. I mean, it's a U.S. school. We do left to right, etc. But it just makes one begin to think, if I am teaching a student in Saudi, I'm teaching math, A, just as a curious person fascinates me, but I'd probably have a discussion with the person. Now, how does this look? I've heard this from this other guy at our school that da-da-da-da-da. They're like, that's true. That's really true. Thank you for acknowledging that. You know, I realize I have to go left or right here. It's a U.S. school, but I think this kind of increases an international sensibility or an awareness. So the student goes, wow, this school really gets it. They know that type of thing. So anyway, I hope that answered your
question. Oh, you did, yeah.
Probably more than you wanted to hear.
Okay, so now like about international students in general, like where do most of them come from? Do they come from a certain area or is it?
We have students, and I'm sorry I didn't bring a list. We have a lot of students from the Middle East, a lot of students from Africa and Asian countries. I don't have a list in front of me. What I do know is that we usually have around 300 or 400 students a year. Not at one time, but you know, you'll have students come in this fall, some will transfer, some may go back to their country. And then there'll be some new that come in. So in the summer, there's a lot of students that might come back from TU, for example, to take a couple courses and then go back to TU. Saves a little bit of money. So there'll be about 400. But one of the things we began to realize as we look, we usually have students from about 50 world areas, 50 countries. And depends who you ask, there's about 195, 196 countries, and that can change every year. Borders change, countries merge, et cetera. So if you think about it, it's about 50% of the world area. Now that may just be this country has one student, so we don't want to be too dramatic about it, but I like to kind of say that every day, 50%, 25%, 50 countries, wake up, moms and dads wake up, whatever, kind of thinking about their son or daughter, or niece or nephew maybe, going to school here. You know, how they can do on that test, or how's that English paper going? So to kind of think about how TCC is seen every day by families around the world, at least from 25 world areas, to think about us, which is kind of neat. So it's not like we, even though we're kind of in the middle of nowhere, and we're trying to improve that awareness around the world so more students come here, but for those who are here and whose families, you know, they have connections back home, they think about it. So it's kind of as the sun begins to rise across the horizon, every worlder is going, how's so-and-so doing, whatever, and it kind of puts a face on this whole notion of international students and all that, that, you know, and I don't know if any of you have traveled 7,000 or 8,000 miles away and
I've been to Mexico City.
Lived in another country for a year or two and studied, but it's quite an investment on their time. But there may be other questions about that. So,
why do they choose TCC? Like
a lot of students, that's a great question. That's a really good question because you can almost ask to other students in the world. They might say, "Why would I go to your school? You know, why would I go to TU? Why would I go to OSU? Why would I go to Harvard versus Yale?" I mean, it's a great question. Yeah. You know, even for you, why would you all go to TCC? You don't have to answer that. A lot of it because they have a family member here.
And like in Tulsa?
Yeah. They might have had some, you know, family that came, maybe an uncle owns a business here. And they say, yeah, come on over and you can live with me or we'll find you an apartment or whatever. And they'll stay with that person or they might help sponsor them. Yep. You know, they might do all that, just pad their own pocket and attend TCC. That's the way it's been for quite some time. We're trying to move more to where anyone in the world who would qualify to come here could come. So having to know someone here isn't a requirement. It was kind of the way we had it for a long time because we don't have an airport pickup service. We don't have housing per se.
Yeah.
So we can't provide the support services that a university might have or that has dormitories, you get that type of thing. But we're trying to expand that notion. To where students can come here and we'll figure out ways to get them at the airport or use volunteers. There's ways to accommodate this. So really any student who does become aware of this, and more students are, that will grow. And then the more we grow, we have more perspectives and it just, everything kind of grows together.
Now you said how like they qualify, so how do they qualify to be able to come?
They qualify, they have to be usually a high school grad. Just like think about what it qualifies for you to come here. It's pretty much the same. So we are open admissions, if you've heard that concept. Yeah. You don't have to have a 25 ACT or a 30 ACT or whatever the highest score you get. It's open admissions. If you don't quite have the greatest ACT score, you should take the Compass test, I can't remember.
Yeah.
And then they say, well, your math is not so great, and blah, blah, blah. Take, you know, intermediate algebra or a writing class if your English isn't so hot, that type of thing. But they actually do the same thing. A couple of the additional things they have to do, though, is they have to get a visa to come study. They're F1. There's several visa types. It's like a vitamin chart list. There's A, B, C, D, F. All there's L, there's R. There's all different types of visa types. Don't ask me to name them all. But the F1 is the most common. That's where your student has to be full-time. So that's something that they're here to study. The government says you can come here to study at TCC. And it's all government approved. They have to do a visa interview in their home country. And it's a real quick process, and they can say yes or no, just like that. It's usually about a 2-minute interview. So they have to be prepared. The main issue is they don't want students to come here and say they're going to come to a school, and then the student just heads off and goes who knows where.
Yeah.
So they got to be here. So there's tighter regulations. There's a form called the I-20 that has to be issued to that student that allows them to get through into the country, and then they get an official I-20 form when they get here. They have to show that they have about $20,000 in the bank account, which is the amount it would cost to go to school here, which is about $10,000 for a year for international student, plus $10,000 for living expenses, which is a figure we get from financial aid. So if you're applying for financial aid, they know what it costs, estimated living expenses, to support you while you go to school. You know, it doesn't matter where you live, it's just that's what it costs to live in the Tulsa area versus Dallas or Kansas City or New York, et cetera. And so about $20,000. So, in that type of thing. So, it's some additional requirements. When they're here, they have to be full-time, 12 hours. They can only take one online class of that 12. So they could be in 15 and have a couple of online, but of the 12, only one can be online. And it makes sense, if it's all online, where would they be?
Yeah.
So they have to be in class, or they're not in class, we have to find out why. I mean, there's some different regulations that perhaps, if you don't show up to class, then, well, I don't know. So, and students don't have to come to every class, by the way. In some cultures, going to class, you don't go to class. You get enrolled in university, and you can show up and take the final. If you pass, you pass. Here, it's like, the teacher might email you, where have you been? I've learned about you, which is nice that we reach out that way. Some cultures, it doesn't matter. If you show up and take the final, you get an A, you get an A for the course.
Yeah, because like in our class, if you don't show up six times, you get taken out of the class.
You can be taken out of the class. And that's really points to a whole other discussion that maybe we'll talk about, but I'll hit upon it real quick, is the whole cultural assimilation into U.S. higher ed. Going to class, plagiarism, some world area, and these, when I say these comments, it's from students I've talked to or taught, so it's not just making this up, but students think research in some world areas is literally going to Google and searching something about these chalkboards or whatever, and then they just cut and paste and submit it. That's the research, going to Google, and we might chuckle here and go, well, that's not research. Well, did you document your source? That doesn't always matter, but they have researched it, they've looked it up, this type of thing. So you have a student who plagiarizes, they need to be taught. So to this end, we offer a 1-credit-hour course to all new international students. Not transfer always, because if they're like from TU, straight A's, they know how higher ed works, they don't need all that. But for the new student, they need to know about the culture of higher ed. You talk about plagiarism, going to class. Teachers here often like group discussions. A lot of world areas, the instructional method is you talk, I write, boom. I've had a student say they literally come in and write and write and write, and I'm copying, 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 and the test comes from that. I've had students tell me that they'll say, okay, from this paragraph, here's the paragraph, here's the missing words, fill them in. Like you have to memorize your notes, and that's it. These are stories I hear from people. I don't remember all the world areas, but that may not be relevant for this discussion. But this is a type of, so the point I want to make is that people come in with this paradigm of how they see teaching and learning. And they're coming into, and you are all familiar with how they teach at TCC, and then if you transfer on to university, how they teach there, there's a lot of similarities. And that's sometimes kind of crash and burn. You come into that environment, it's tough. So we do have those class to kind of introduce them to some of these concepts. And, talking in class, sometimes maybe it's gender-based, sometimes you just don't talk in class. If you're the professor and you're asked a question and I don't get it, that doesn't fly in every world area. It's not my problem, you don't get it. I'm here to talk, you're here to write, you take the test. You know, here it's like, professor, I don't understand. Well, let me explain it this way. It's like, wow, this is nice. So it's kind of cool, but it's kind of a culture shock. Electronics, some people come from other world areas where they don't have a lot of fancy computers. You put them in an online class, they're like, what? What's Blackboard? What's this? Submit your assignment this way. What? Oh, I missed the deadline. Can I turn it in late? No. Well, I don't get the points. That's right. Did you go through the tutorial that we emailed you a link to so you learn about Blackboard? No, I didn't. This is the learning moment. So I've had this with domestic students too, believe me. So it's not a new lesson. It's kind of universal. But with international students, it can be. And then, the international students are just fantastic, brilliant, better sometimes than domestic students. And I don't mean to be pejorative with that, better than me. I mean, they're just like brilliant people. They're gonna go on and be movers and shakers back in their countries. And they started here, so.
Other than like professors, like maybe sending them an email, is there like any other way that they monitor the students to make sure that they are going to class?
No, we're able to, there's ways that we can monitor students who go to class. We don't really get too invasive at all. There may be a faculty member that might tell us, or if we send out an email to all international students and we don't hear back from several, we might try to call them, but then their phone might be disconnected. There's just different things we can, to see. They're here to learn. They're here by the U.S. government's permission to study, and that's what they need to be doing. So we kind of help enforce those laws and those rules, those types of things. Just like you're supposed to go to your composition class, and the teacher, though, will enforce and say, hey, missed six times, you're out.
Yeah.
Sorry. Well, I was sick. Oh, well, what happened? Well, I was unconscious for 6 weeks in the hospital. Oh, well, that's a pretty good reason. They might go, well, how do we make this up? Or maybe get an incomplete grade and then finish the course later. I mean, the faculty or the division would work with you on all that. That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. So. But we also have to trust the students go and go to class.
Now, like on average, how many speak English when they come? Like,
that's a good question, and I should have hit upon this. They have to have certain English ability when they come here, and if not, there's some remediation is not the best word, but you might relate to reading classes, writing classes, or beginning algebra, those type. But we have an intensive English language program here. There's a score called the TOEFL, Test of English as a Foreign Language, that they have to get a certain score on. If they don't fall within, if they fall below, it's 500. You don't even know this, but it's a 500. If they don't get to 500, then anything like 460 up to 499, they got to go through an intensive English program. Below that, you go through a regular ESL program and then go into the intensive English. Completion of that is equivalent to passing, if you will, passing that TOEFL test. If a student gets a 500, 510, whatever scores you can get, they come and they immediately go into college. So, but a 500 doesn't always mean they're just, you know, you guys have probably a great command of the English language. If I said, hey, come up with some great questions and I want you to go over and stump the librarian. Do you know what that means? Stump the librarian or stump your professor? Do you know what stump means? Kind of like,
really know how to answer it.
Yeah, they're like, no, I don't know where Azerbaijan is. You stumped me, I don't know. Well, if you say that to students, okay, here we have this assignment. We want you to go into the library and get familiar with the library. So we want you to ask them a question like, do you know where Azerbaijan is, if that's where you're from? Or do you know where Nigeria is or Saudi Arabia? If they don't, then they say, I don't know. They say, oh, you kind of been stumped. You can't, they don't know what that means. If you look up stump in the dictionary, you can see tree stump or whatever. So it's very idiomatic. I lost track of it.
Just like the English, like them not speaking English or like being in trouble, does that cause many problems for them? Like, is it hard for them to?
It can be, I think it's to that double work issue we talked about earlier, not having a great command. And the more they're here, the better it gets. It's just incredible to watch them grow. And if you've studied other languages yourself, whether it's one semester or more, you know what it takes to learn it, let alone use it. That's the tough part. You can probably learn how to conjugate verbs in Spanish and other languages, but when someone comes up in Spanish and asks you a little bit different question because you learned it this way, the formal, how are you? Or someone comes up and say, what's up, or sup, in another language, you're like, are you saying, how are you doing? Yeah, but it's like, you get the idea. And it's that all the nuance that you pick up when you've been at a school or in that country, that's why study abroad and immersion is so important with language learning, you'll pick up. So it's not that we all have to be completely literal, but we don't often realize how command of the language and how we can play with the language in speaking with others that we do have. So I think we need to be more mindful if you're talking to an international student, to initially, if they're new to the country, to avoid a lot of the idioms that they may not know. Idioms are tough to understand. And so this is part of that intersection of when you're going to another country to study. Someday you might study another country and you'll go, oh, that's what, yeah, I get that.
All right, now, like, do most of them have jobs when they come?
They're here to study. That's their purpose. That's what the F-1 visa means. You're here to study and be a full-time. The only place you can work, and there are some exceptions, there's always exceptions to the rules, is on campus. You can't come here as a full-time student to get a job at McDonald's. There are jobs at McDonald's. There's jobs in malls during the holidays, at the kiosks and all that, but it's illegal to work. You cannot work. So, but you can work on campus. That's how they separate that.
So like when you mean work on campus, like what would be like?
Well, like for example, let's say the bookstore down here down the hall has an opening, part-time clerk or part-time, you know, stocking the shelves or whatever, that would be a kind of library. Different, you know, whoever, usually it's a part, you know, think of like work study type positions, okay. Those type, but they can't do work study because that's federally funded and they can't receive financial aid, things like that, federal aid.
How do they like get around like transportation? Like,
some will come here and get a car. We have identified international student friendly apartments, you know, they embrace international students, they don't have to always have a co-signer when they rent an apartment. We try to look for safety. Apartment complex is a little bit closer to bus stops, so public transportation. It's an issue for some because, my opinion, Tulsa isn't really, we have public transportation, but it's not like a lot of cities where our students have grown up where that is your transportation. You don't have a car. You can get anywhere in the city. Here it's very limited, and if you live out near Southeast, it's even more limited, and further south, it's very limited. But for example, the example we typically use is for a student to get from southeast to northeast by bus is 2.5 hours. Now, it's not because the bus drives slow. It's just because of all the connections you have to make to get up to northeast. So we work around that by trying to have staff be in southeast to meet a student to help meet their needs or their questions. Or, you know, we use phone or email as well, but that's kind of tough.
Now, do most go to, like, just a certain school, or do they take classes at all?
Actually all of them, even West Campus. Not as many at West, because transportation then becomes very, very tough. Most of our students either study, want to go into nursing or business. A lot of students come to study English and then go on into, they pick a major and go into a major. But typically, they're kind of evenly spread, northeast, metro, and southeast. There's a few out here that go. We have one that goes out here, is going to graduate in a few weeks. It's exciting. It's from Malaysia. It's probably more at southeast, but still at the other two. Engineering's at northeast, a lot of engineering there.
Do they have any distractions? Like, what would be like distractions they would have when they get here?
I think the way I would answer that is think about distractions you might have. You might wake up going, I feel like throwing up. Well, that's a distraction. So they get sick as well. A distraction might be another type of sickness is homesickness.
Yeah.
That's a big distraction. What are you doing? You're 7,000 miles away and you find out that your dad's ill, your mom's ill, brother died, brother was hit by a car. Those are distractions. And just like they would be here. But you have the advantage, if you will, of driving back up to Owosso and laying down in your own bed and or taking some medicine or Theraflu or whatever you're going to take. Or if your brother gets hurt, you can go to the hospital at St. Francis. There's things you can do, but what do you do when? That's really tough. And with today, with technology and Skyping and all these different apps you can get on your iPhone, there's ways to connect more and more. But that's some hardships. The transportation might be, kind of getting around, that's kind of tough. Not really feeling like this is your home. So we have different initiatives to try to create the sense of belongingness here, that while you're studying at TCC, there's a larger community that really does want to embrace you and support you and learn from you. So
do most of the students live in like apartments or like with family?
Most, yeah, if not all, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we don't have dormitories at the school, so those are the two options.
Okay, do most like come back, or do they they come back to the U.S. or do they leave after their schooling?
They have to by some, and this probably gets more into the weeds than we need to share now. But there are some parameters of when they can travel home and not. Once they're in the country, they can travel around the country, but they need to let us know. During the Thanksgiving break, they might have an uncle down in Dallas go. There's no one keeping them from going. But there's certain parameters of, you have to study here for a semester or two before you can travel. There's all these different rules they have to follow. Sometimes a student visa will expire, and they can still stay in country, but if they leave the country, getting back in, they have to get a new visa. So they got to make sure that's up to date, their passport's up to date. If it's going to expire, get that updated before you go. So there's just a lot of things in addition to just going to school they have to think about. So.
Do most transfer from TCC if they do stay to a bigger college?
A lot of them do, yeah. We have a gentleman transferring, goes to West, he's going to be transferred to OSU in the fall. One's going to ORU and the NSU, some go to OU. It's amazing. These students, on average, do just as well as our domestic counterparts. They tend to stay longer. It's exciting. It's neat to see them come, and they're kind of shy at first. Wouldn't you be if I sent you down to the world area to study?
Yeah.
Teach you the language and then say, okay, guess what? Got on a plane, you're going to go over there and study for a couple of years. You'd feel a little, there's that rare person who probably just lands and goes, what do we do first? Let's go. Well, that's what you're going like. What am I doing? What am I, this food looks a little different. Let's go. I miss my comfort food, et cetera, my bed, et cetera. So, but after they begin to adapt, they like it. They like it a lot. And they really appreciate our efforts to help connect them and to create what I call a culture of invitation. You know, you can only have so many pizza parties, and you don't want to go to all of them. But to be invited is nice, right? It's nice to be able to say, yeah, I don't know if I want to go, but I was invited. So but if there's nothing they could go to or participate in other than classes, they can get kind of lonely. And so yeah. We have international student clubs, and through that we try to connect.
What kind of, like?
Well, we have, like, for example, the Southeast International Student Organization, where international students can get together, and they have a, it's an officially sanctioned group under the student activities area. They have some a budget, they have a president, a second. I mean, it's also about leadership and learning how to lead a group, how to take notes, and if you forget to take notes, what you need to do is, so it's kind of a teaching and learning moment. It's more of a co-curricular component to the classroom experience and teaching some leadership skills. There's also, of course, student government. The students are, they can be involved with as well. So just ways to kind of get connected and feel a part of. Sometimes after the ISO meeting, they might go to Sonic and get, you know, go to the Sonic happy hour and get a shake or something, and then I'll go to a movie together, and this is kind of hanging out. But a lot of domestic students go to the groups as well, so it's really kind of neat to see, who have an interest in international. So it's a way to kind of connect domestic students with international.
Like, if they do go home, what would be reasons why they would want to?
Surprisingly, a lot of them don't come as much as you think. Some will go home if they're going to go travel with their family. Some will go home just because they want to go home. Some will actually just stay here and just hang out. You think they'd go home, but sometimes they don't. I think a lot of students, they communicate a lot electronically, and they're just kind of here to stay, and it's expensive to fly. You may not have money to fly.
Yeah.
So.
Let's see, regarding your job, like, is this something that you've wanted to do since you were young, or did you just, like, come upon it and think, like, well, this might be interesting?
Not since I was young. I'm not a mapper.
Yeah.
I didn't, you know, a lot of people, since I was 7, I wanted to be a, it's like, that's good. But look at the research. Most people don't go into the fields. Look at their college diploma. Oh, how are you doing in that field? No, I don't work at this restaurant now. It's like, oh. I mean, so we don't always go into the areas, unfortunately. I wish it were that easy. But some do, some for record, some do. Maybe many, but a lot don't. So no, but I've always liked people. Indifferences. When I was little, I was kind of like in the marching band musical group. I was like 14 years old, traveled the entire United States in the summer, so being away from home didn't bother me. Seeing new people didn't bother me. Loved music as well, so the creativity element. I was going to be a psychologist, didn't really want to do that. Kind of went down that path a little bit, thought, man, like the business. But I've always liked the element of connecting people for greater learning. And that's kind of why I landed where I did. My dissertation, which is from OSU, the doctorate from OSU, was about why various racial groups don't always connect. What sustains a disconnect? What are the ties that keep this group not connected to this group, et cetera, et cetera? Then how do you intentionally kind of begin to change that? But again, it's the connecting piece. And over and over, I just see the benefit of connection. Like, for, I don't know if anything will come out of our connection today at all, but I've had things happen. It's like, I don't know if you remember, but I was part of this interview a couple of years ago, and can you write me a reference letter or this or that? It's like those little micro things that come out of connections are huge. Or, you know, a teacher might connect people for an assignment like you three. So it'd be kind of ironic that 20 years down the road, the three of you are opening some auto repair store. I'm just making this up. You're like, yeah, we interviewed you 20 years ago, and I'm like, can you give me a discount on my car repair? Just kidding. You're like, no way. But I mean, it's just amazing what can come out of those connections. And not always some great, grand, glorious story comes out of it. Sometimes nothing. But if you don't intentionally connect, nothing will. We know that. Things will stay the same in most cases. So as I began to see the benefits of connecting and how that communication, things come out of that, and I started getting into the international space, doing some traveling and this and that, how people, you know, who don't have connections to world areas can gain from that. So when I moved into the global piece, it was kind of exciting. I could start doing that with study abroad. And then a couple years ago, with the reorganization of TCC in the academic area, I was put with the international student area as well. So kind of helping students go out to study in the world, having students come here to study, and then anything within that space where these students can interact, interact with faculty, interact with staff, administration, with the community, becomes really an open space to really do some creative programming. We just took students, domestic students and international students, I don't know if you read the Tulsa World, there's an article last Saturday where we worked with Michael Wallace. I'll tell you who he is in just a second. But we, through student activities dollars, it really wasn't that expensive. We got a nice bus and we actually drove Route 66 from Tulsa over to Arcadia. I don't know if you've ever been to Pops. They have like 700 Pops.
Yeah.
But we actually rode Route 66. And we rode Route 66 with Michael Wallace, who, if you ever seen the Cars cartoon, it came out in 2006, you remember Cars? There was a sheriff. Michael was the voice of the sheriff. He lives in Tulsa. He has that gruff, long, yeah. I can't do the rough, low, gruff voice. Anyway, he's the one that works with John Lasseter, who's like, what, CEO of Pixar.
Yeah.
I read some of Michael's books. He lives in Tulsa, been here since 82. Historian, writer, author, etc., who wrote about Route 66 a lot. John called Michael one day and said, hey, we want to do a movie about this car. You know, that was just a concept phase and blah, blah, blah. Can you come out and talk? And they did. And then now, boom, long story short, there's this born. He was a sheriff. But they rode up and down Route 66 to get a sense of all the animators and John Lasseter and all the VP, all up and down Route 66 to get an idea for this, what this cartoon would look like. And Michael Wallace wanted to make sure it was about, the people along the road. Not the road, not the asphalt, the physical, but the people along the road.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's been a while since I've seen the cartoon, but is it the Porsche, is it Sally?
Something like that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
The character for that, the real character is Don Wells, who owns the Rock Cafe in Stroud. So if you ever go to Stroud, go to the Rock Cafe and say, hey, Don, I heard you're, yeah. There's a little bit of Route 66 that goes through the corner of southeast corner of Kansas, 14-mile stretch. And John Lasseter and Michael and others were driving down, sorry for these stories, but I'll make them, we're driving the road, and Michael said, stop. I'm something I want to go look at. And they all got out of the car, and they go behind this building, and there's this old beat up tow truck, rusted out tow truck. We're all looking at it, you know, and all these creative geniuses, and all of a sudden that's when Mater was born. And why, and Mater likes to go backwards, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason behind that, I'll tell you later, kind of pique your interest. But we've had a lot of people along the road that talk about the road, write about the road, paint about the road, so the whole story is about the people. The reason why I want to share the story and the reason why we did is so international students and domestics could go and have conversations about the meaning of a road. And would you in your country give some credence to a road? Would you do a cartoon about a road? I don't know. I don't know their answers because they were supposed to talk about it. But it's a way to kind of, we call it Pops Fusion 66, is a way to fuse people and place and perspectives all together on this bus. And that's what it's all about. That's why I like what I do, is this what you get from that. So it's, I don't know if you're, have you taken psychology yet?
So
you've heard of Gestalt psychology, a German movement within psychology, and there's this term Gestalt, which is the sum of the parts is greater than the whole. I'm saying that right. So there's something greater amongst the four of us than just four guys. There's something happening here. There's a learning moment. Unless we get hit in the head with a 2x4, we'll probably remember this moment the rest of our lives. We might not remember what we wore, but we'll remember it. So there's something beyond just this physical. So that's kind of what happens. So I think that's kind of what I like too in terms of what I do, is there's something to be gained through the bringing of people together that you cannot do unless you bring people together. And what that is, that's not what I'm concerned about. I'm very organic, and I know that things will happen, and it's usually good. So I'm not a mapper, to go back to the question, in case I was getting off course, but things will happen. I've seen it over and over and over again, how things can happen. So even being here, I can tell you that story later, why we're even here today. So that's another story. I love to talk, so sorry to take your quarter.
You're good.
It's going to blow up in a minute. Talking too much.
I think that's all the questions.
Is that all the questions?
Yeah. I think we're all
so
done.
Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. Okay.
Thank you for your time.
Good. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, are we on?